So if you are new this morning, and maybe this is your first time at Inglewood Church, obviously the service is a little different today, but we're really glad you're here, and we really hope you enjoy the message. And whether wherever you are on your journey in life, whether you feel, you know, you're right there with Jesus, or whether you're exploring your faith, we're just really glad, actually, that you're here this morning. And we have given our worship team the day off today. They did an amazing job over the Christmas carols and the Christmas services. We had around about 500 or 600 people come through our doors last weekend, which was fantastic. And so many came from our community, particularly at our carols Christmas Eve service. There was a stack of work that went into that. And those that really put a lot of work in, we are so grateful to them for what they did. And it was such an amazing and momentous time, actually, for our church, just to share the message of Jesus around Christmas time. But if you are new this morning, we'd love to catch up after the service. Say hello, have a cup of tea, have a cup of coffee, and just get to meet you. This is a little bit more in-house, I suppose, compared to what we might do at a Christmas carol service. A lot of the times at Christmas, you talk about the nativity scene, you talk about Jesus as the baby. This morning, I want us to go just a little bit deeper, perhaps, than what we might normally do at a Christmas time. And I want to unwrap, if as it were, the windows of heaven and have a look at something that the Bible talks about Christmas, perhaps from a heavenly, from a divine perspective. And perhaps there's no better gospel. There's four stories, there's four different perspectives on Jesus's birth, around Jesus's life, than Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I want us to look this morning at the Gospel of John, in particular the first three or four or five verses. And I want to focusing on the theme of Jesus as the light of the world. When John the Apostle wrote the book of John, when he wrote the Gospel of John, it may interest you to know that he was actually around, well, he was at least 80 years old, 80, and perhaps closer to 90 years old. What had happened was the destruction of Jerusalem had happened about AD 66, 67, so about 66, 67 years after Jesus had gone back to heaven. The destruction of Jerusalem happens, and the temple is torn apart brick by brick. The temple in the city of Jerusalem, symbolizing God's blessing, symbolizing God's presence. John had, you know, at least in some part, had known that had happened. At around about the age of 80 or so, he was found himself exiled on the island of Patmos. He found himself in exile. Remember what Jesus said to Peter? You know, Peter, you're going to be taken away to a place you don't want to go to. You're going to suffer a death you don't want to suffer. And Peter asked the question of Jesus, well, Jesus, what about John? What's going to happen to John? And the answer given is a little bit mysterious, but there seems to be some sort of indication that John wouldn't actually die. But whether he did, whether he didn't, we don't actually know. What we do know is that it was at a very late stage of his life that he chose to write the Gospel of John and also the book of Revelation. And I want to say this morning that there is something about the years as they go on, which if we treat them well, and if we do life well, we can actually gain wisdom as we go on. So much of our culture, so much of our society is geared around the young and around the fresh and around the new. But actually there's something that is very deep and very meaningful from learning from the wisdom of our elders, from those of us who have been around life for a bit longer. As we grow older and as the years go by, and perhaps this is a good time to talk about it, being the last day of 2017, there's actually a choice that we're presented with. And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I say we can all observe people that grow older well and those that don't grow older well. But those who grow older well, we find in them a maturity and a wisdom and a grace. As the years go on, they've seen so many things happen. And one of the things that happens as you grow older, I think, is that you tend to worry less about the small things. The small things that perhaps we worry about, what's going to happen, where are we going to go, what's going to happen if this happens, the stresses that we have. As you grow older, you've seen more and more things happen. And you realize that actually you can be much more reflective in your older age than perhaps what you were in your younger age. And I want to say that John wrote this gospel with the benefit and the wisdom of old age. And it's a beautiful peep into the divine nature of Jesus, the fact that he was fully God and fully man. If you read the gospel of Matthew, Matthew takes Jesus' heritage as a king. He goes back to King David when he talks about Jesus. And so much of what he emphasizes is Jesus as King of the Jews. When we get to Mark, the Gospel of Mark doesn't even have a nativity scene in the Bible, in the account he gives. He starts straight up with action, because that's what Mark, the Gospel, is all about. It's all about the Gospel of Jesus and what it means and what you need to do, and there's so much action that takes place. When we get to the Gospel of Luke, we know Luke was a doctor. And so he writes from the perspective of actually wanting to show us that Jesus was fully man. And so he goes back to Adam when he talks about Jesus' origins and where he came from. But John's emphasis is purely and squarely upon Jesus as divine. So he wants to go back to the very, very beginning of his work. And he wants us to understand, he wants you to understand, he wants me to understand that there is a divine perspective on life, which when we take it and when we understand it, the things that so often we worry about, the things that we stress about, when we view life from a divine perspective, we can put it into its proper perspective. In John's day, one of the things that was happening was that the Pharisees that we read about in Jesus' day, their power and their influence actually continued to grow. And one of the reasons for that was because their city of Jerusalem was ransacked and there was so much uncertainty around the place. The Pharisees believed in life after death. And so one of the things that they said, you know, things are going terrible, but the next life is going to be better for us and for you if you follow these rules and follow these commands. John wants to actually push against that and say, actually, there's a better way. Life isn't about fulfilling a set of rules and decrees, so therefore in the next life, if you're good in this life, you'll get to heaven in the next. John actually wants to compete against that philosophy and that thought and say, you know what, it's not about actually whether you're doing good or whether you're doing bad. It's about what you believe about Jesus and what you do with Jesus in your life. So there's these two philosophies competing, and John, as he writes this gospel, wants to push into that. So let's have a look. This is what he writes in the first three verses. In the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God and the Word was God. The Word existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through him and nothing was created except through him. Just leave that one there. I want to talk about this for a moment. In the beginning, the Word already existed. Now, I'm no Greek scholar. But I do know that this word here is actually the Greek word logos. And what it actually means, it's actually a philosophical term of the day, of his culture and of his time. He has grabbed that term, the word logos, which means the divine, which means the creator, which means the source of all life and all activity. And it was a philosophical, theological, if you like, word of the day. He wants to grab it and he wants to use it for his own purposes and for his own means, because he's got a point to make. In the beginning was the divine force, the creative force. He's going to take it a step further than that. He's going to grab what someone that was into philosophy may have thought that it was just some sort of force, just some sort of divine energy, and he wants to actually give it personhood. We're going to get to that in a minute. But in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. Is it any wonder that when people want to talk about Jesus and they want to disprove or attack the fact that he was fully God, is it any wonder that this is the first passage of Scripture that they will go to and try to change? Because this is so imminently, it's so clear about what he is saying. He is telling the story of Jesus Christ. He's telling the story of Jesus. And this is where he chooses to start. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. Everything that was created came from him. Now, in this room, there's going to be a whole raft of different views on creation. And I'm not going to talk about which one I think is correct or which one I don't. I'm just going to acknowledge the fact that in this room, there'll be those that would actually look at the Bible and say, 7 days, literal days, that is how God created the world. There is going to be some other people in this room who are going to look at the scriptures and they're going to say, well, yes, God created the world, but he did it over a series of stages. And for all different reasons, Christians will take different views on that. What I want to say, the Bible says, is the most important thing, is a phrase that is another phrase, ex nihilo, which means out of nothing. God created everything out of nothing. In your life, and as you think about the origins of the universe, and you think about how everything came into being, you actually have got a choice. You can go down the rabbit hole of saying, well, there was this, and before that, there was this, and before that, there was this, and before that, there was this. And you can go on with that ad nauseum. Or you can have the other choice. Well, before everything, there must have been something, or maybe even someone. And this is what this scripture says. This is what John is saying. He is saying before even the existence of time, there was God. The scriptures tell us, in fact, that God created time. There was God. In your life, as you think about your life, you've actually got a choice to make. Whether you're going to go down that rabbit hole or whether you're going to say, there must have been a beginning. John is presenting to us the fact that in the beginning, the Word was with God and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through him and nothing was created except through him. Now, John is doing something quite sneaky here. He's actually setting the reader up. And perhaps in some way, he's setting us up. As he says this, he's drawing in those who philosophize. He's drawing in those who think deeply about things. And then when we get to verse 14, he's going to say something which is actually quite shocking and quite confrontational to the people of his day. Go down to verse 14. So the Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. So what he has done here, he's set the reader up. He's drawn them along. And then he's gone, this is Jesus. This is Jesus. The Word became human and made his home among us. Philippians chapter 2 tells a story. Although he was divine, he did not take divinity as something to be grasped, but he became a human just like one of us. The message of John is actually the fact that this Word, this creative influence that made everything out of nothing, actually became one of us. This is his story. This is what he wants us to know. The baby in the manger that maybe Luke talks about, maybe Matthew talks about, the nativity scene. The baby didn't stay a baby, but neither was he a baby before he was a baby. He was actually God come to earth. And this is the shocking truth that actually John wants to say. The Word became human. He made his place amongst us. If you know the story of John the Apostle, he was the disciple that Jesus loved. He was Jesus' best mate. He was the one that at the Passover feast, he was leaning up against Jesus and Jesus was sharing some things with him that he didn't share with anyone else. At different times, as you read his account and other people's accounts, it's so obvious that John was the one who knew Jesus better than anyone else in his humanity. In fact, as he's on the cross, as Jesus is dying on the cross, and he sees his own mother, his earthly mother, as the senior son, he was responsible to make sure that his mother was cared for. But he was dying. He was dying on a cross. What was he to do? His mother was there. He's looking at her. She has no visible means to support. Who is going to care for my mother because I'm dying on the cross? Obviously, we can see his compassion. Obviously, we can see his sense of responsibility, his integrity, everything else. In that moment, what does he do? You know, there's different levels of friendship. Some friends, you can call up and say, come over and help me move my house. That's a really close friend, the friend that will come over and help you move your heavy cupboards. There's other friends you can say, come over for a party. There's other friends maybe you can just send a text to or something like that. We all have different levels of friendship. As Jesus is looking at John, such was his level of friendship with him that he could turn to him and say, John, here is your mother. Mother, here is your son. In other words, this person I know, I am close enough to, that if I ask him to take on this responsibility, he will take it on. John was the person that knew Jesus, I think, the best, the most, his closest friend on earth. As they walked for 3 years, his disciples, as they fished, as people attacked them, as people praised them, the mountaintops, the lows, the highs, at the cross of Christ, as he's being crucified, John is there. John saw Jesus in all his humanity. He knew more of him than anyone else. He writes about his divinity. That is what he saw the most clearly. That is what he wants us to understand, and he wants you to understand. The Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love. We have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. This is the message that we have as Christians. This is what we have to take into the world. This is the story of Christmas, that God came to earth. The divine came. This is the choice that people have in their lives, to accept this or not to accept it. Now, as we go on, I want to put some hay where the horses can eat it. I want to put some hay where the horses can eat it. What I mean by that is I want to give you something to take away today, something that you can grab hold of and say, this is actually helpful for my life. Back up to the other earlier verses in verse 4 and 5. Thanks, Clem. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought life to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. John writes about the light in his gospel so much. In chapter 8, verse 12, Jesus is the light of the world. 9:15, the light has come into the world and we will never walk in the darkness. John chapter 12, believe in the light. There's a real amazing parallel here. If we want to go back to Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, what are the first words that we have recorded that God said? Does anyone know? Anyone want to hazard a guess? Let there be light. These are the very first words that God said in Genesis 1. Let there be light. And I find in this passage here a parallel with that. That Jesus is actually the light of the world. It's like John's gospel is dovetailing with Genesis. The account of creation. God made the world ex nihilo, out of nothing. The darkness was there, but then God said, let there be light. There was a darkness in the world before Jesus came as well. It's a spiritual darkness. It's a sense of not knowing where to go and what to do. And some of you here this morning, for this year, you've actually trudged around and you've actually felt like, well, I just don't know what to do. Some things have happened to people this year which you never expected to happen. You didn't plan to have those things happen. There's some things that happened that you would say, you know what, this was a really dark moment in my life. This was a moment where I wasn't sure what to do. And I wasn't sure how I was going to get through. This is the moment when I was trudging through the bush, not knowing where I was going. Some of you here this morning, you've actually had moments this year that you can think of. Moments that caused you stress. Moments that caused you worry and anxiety, and you didn't know how you were going to get through. And some of us, if we're honest, We look for our own ways to cope. We look for our own ways to deal. We tightened our chest. We stuck our head up and we said, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to make this happen. I said, this is not going to affect me. I'm going to deal with this in my own way. But Jesus is actually saying in this passage that actually in every area of your life, he wants to show you what you should be doing. He wants to help you. He wants to bring light to that situation that you find yourself struggling in. And just like the kids, when it was most dark, that's when the light shines the best. When it's most dark in your life, when you're most uncertain about what to do, when you're most anxious, that's when you need God the most. That's when you need his light to shine into your heart the most. That's where you need him the most. The very worst thing we can do when things are tough, when we're uncertain, when you're wondering what to do, when you're wondering why something has happened to you, the very worst thing you can do is run away from God. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. Maybe for some of us, as we're prepared to share around the communion table, maybe for some of us, actually, this time is just a time where we can reflect upon the year that has been. And we can think about maybe some of the times where we had a burden, where we had a stress, where we had a worry. And instead of perhaps turning to God, we turned to our own things. And we thought, you know what, I can do this myself. I can get through this myself. I don't need Jesus.